Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Welcome back. It's The Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production here, and we're so happy to have you here. No, it's not too late to shop for the holidays. You're almost too late, but not quite. Alex Van Block is with us this week and next in a two-part series. There's so much to talk about in the entertainment industry that it does indeed take two shows to cover, and we are more than happy to accommodate that with Alex as our special guest. In just a few minutes, Gene Bliss, the customer experience, and Gene is author of a book, I Love You More Than My Dog. It's called Personal Self, Business Self, and we'll find out about that. Jeffrey Gittimer as well, a little bit later on in the show, is going to talk about testimonials and how they might benefit your business or your presentation. And, man, it's amazing that 2009 is headed away so quickly. But always fun to be able to have Alex as part of the show as well, so it's good. In the spirit of the holidays, Brad, we have JetBlue, which I kind of like. It's a good airline.
They've
got
a good
some
airline.
Cool stuff on there.
Yep.
Jet, they've launched a holiday gift guide that shows what happens when consumers don't fly on the airline. Well, that's that's a great way to show that your product is much better, showing what the others don't do. The low-cost airline held a sampling effort in New York City this past Monday, as a matter of fact, targeting frequent flyers, particularly Wall Street and the C-level executives. JetBlue distributed about 35,000 of its gift guides via a network of 2,300 Big Apple town car transportation companies. A holiday gift guide is in essence a joke, according to the president of the New York-based Show Media, the advertising agency that's working with JetBlue on the program. One of the gifts in the guide is a knee jockey. That sounds like it could be R-rated, but a knee jockey sounds like something Tiger. No, never mind. For instance, basically what it is, it's a bra for your knees. Why would you need
course.
A bra for your knees?
Well, there you go. It's a brand name. I've got two of those on right now.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, basically what it is, it holds your knees up so they don't have to be smashed by the seat in front of you. The point there is to illustrate that JetBlue has a lot of room on their jets.
Yeah.
On their Airbus jets. Well, it's good. So look for that. It's the Flyers Collection, a special gift guide for the holidays.
You know, you and I both travel a lot by air, and I was watching the flight attendant do the pre-takeoff review of various things. And every time I see her show how you insert the buckle and be able to buckle your – I look around and I – anyone that's checking that out and then looking down to make sure they're doing it right, I try to move a couple rows away from them. I mean, it's just very, it's right up there with on your cell phone when you get the recording and it says you can hang up after you leave a message.
Yeah.
Isn't it time we do away with that?
We can probably do, you already know how to do that. Right.
Exactly. How many seconds per call spread over millions of calls are actually being wasted by this operator that is pre-recorded telling you that you can hang up and leave a message and push one to leave a callback number and all that stuff that people don't do.
Right.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
Well, anyway, speaking of a novel and unique idea, Microsoft is launching a microblog style service in China based on Windows Live Messaging. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's expanding the social networking functions linked to the chat software, the new service called MSN Juku. Now, this is in China, so I assume that means something. J-U-K-U. Lets users post 140-character messages to an updated screen. Mm-hmm. So they're ripping off who there? Twitter.
The obvious, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you got to go to China to do it.
Thanks.
Usually China is the one ripping us off.
Were we in China yesterday?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, something like that.
No, sometime in the future.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sam Goodman.
There we go.
Right.
Interesting. Well, let's see what happens with that product.
Yeah.
A longtime P&G sponsor of a program, As the World Turns, is going bye-bye.
Really?
The company that invented the soap opera. Did you know they invented the soap opera? I didn't know that.
Thus to sell soap.
And they gave it its name. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. No longer in the soap opera business.
Right.
Just because That's just the way it is. CBS announced it was canceling As the World Turns. 54-year-old soap is the last daytime serial owned by Procter & Gamble. The show chronicled generations of characters, lots of people. Watch that through, generations and such. So quite interesting, the fact that you've got a Procter & Gamble-owned product, and it's finally gone after all these years as well. What will they do?
You know, speaking of Procter & Gamble, P&G is unveiling Swash. I thought this was unusual. It's a line of Tide laundry products to be sold exclusively online.
Swash?
Swash will be available on Amazon and drugstore.com, according to a P&G spokesperson. Our consumers are shopping, working, and playing online. Don't want to know what you're playing, but we'll just go along with that, leading to the decision to launch Swash online only. It'll be interesting to see how that product
does. I don't
get
that. I don't understand.
Well, I mean, if it's a Tide-like product, who's going to want to buy that online, have it shipped to your home in a box that's going to weigh? I mean, who's paying for the shipping? How much is it going to cost? Why don't you just go down when you're picking up your milk and your bread and eggs or whatever you're buying there and pick up your...
Yeah.
I don't know why they're doing that.
I don't get that.
Strange.
Okay. We've got to Alex Van Block on the way here. Right now, Gene Bliss with us. Your personal self should equal your business self. That means you kind of got to get, commingle both. So we'll see what that's all about. Let's listen right now.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Do you connect your personal self with your business self? Indra Nooyi, CEO of PepsiCo, embraces who she is and how she leads. She's a disarmingly endearing combination of serious leader and every mom. And she actively calls on both dimensions of her life in how she leads and gives people permission to lead and act. She was held to extremely high standards growing up. Her mother would pick, for example, one topic per evening on world or current events to discuss. Nooyi uses a similar tactic at work, pressing her teams to come up with solutions to problems, such as creating a lower cost alternative to palm oil. Colleagues say that Indra brings her whole self to work. Her delivery and how she talks about herself and her world are very real. She actively talks about being a mom, pushing her teams to create products that are healthy and easy to grab when it's your turn to provide the snacks at your child's school. Tough but real, tough but human, Indra Nooyi teaches by example. What examples do you set and teach on a regular basis inside your company?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights from major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
That is Gene Bliss at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Alex Van Block is with us many times throughout the year, and especially at this time of the year as we take a look back at what went on in the entertainment industry. Let me tell you a little bit about Alex, as if you don't know. Alex is an award-winning entertainment industry journalist, author, broadcaster, and show business historian. He is a contributing editor at The Hollywood Reporter, also co-editor of Blockbusting, the business of filmmaking, a decade-by-decade survey showcasing 300 blockbuster movies being published by Harper Books and George Lucas Books as well. Block returned to The Hollywood Reporter in 2009, this past year, where he'd been the editor for 7 years, and that's back in the 90s. His resume and his bio here reads like a radio resume. He's been in Miami, Detroit, in L.A. You will also see Alex and hear him on KNBC-TV in L.A. and the Today Show, CNBC, on O'Reilly, on Fox, CNN, and a whole bunch more.
And a regular contributor on that the NPR station up there in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, KPCC's call sheets. For 5 years, he's a frequent guest. Also, there's Off-Ramp.
KCRW?
I think that's what it is. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's good to have Alex back, and we'll talk with him here in just a moment at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Hope you enjoy it.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe.
Stronger than dirt.
And you are here, and we are so happy, too, at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe, and a very special guest, so special, we have a parking lot space out back for him, Alex Ben Block out of L.A. Alex, award-winning entertainment industry journalist, and so much more. Alex, as always, it is great to have you here at the Advertising Show.
Well, thanks so much. Does this mean you're going to buy me a car to fill the space?
Yeah, we did, actually. We got you a Beamer. It's hopefully you like it. It's black. It's nice.
Oh, good.
But okay. Don't get too excited. It's a rental, and it's due back at 6 o'clock.
Got it for the day.
So, Alex, thanks for joining us. I'm really pleased to be taking us through 2009 and all the exciting things that happened in your industry, both television and entertainment in general. And why don't we jump in and talk a little bit about the movie industry, and why don't you take us through the top grossing movies of the year, Alex?
First, I think we need to note this was a very, very good year at the box office, and in fact, when the year is over, we don't know for sure yet, it's either going to be close to or it's going to set a new record for the total grosses for movie ticket sales in the United States. And it wasn't necessarily shared equally, but for those who had the right movies, this was a good year, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. The top grossing movie of the year around the world was Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, which was released in the summer by Paramount Pictures. It did $402 million in the U.S., another $431 million overseas, for a total of $833 million. Not bad. In second place was the latest Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince from Warner Brothers. It did $301 million domestically, and it did $632 million around the world for a total of $934 million, which is actually more than Transformers globally, but of course puts it in number two position in terms of domestic. Number three, a little bit of a surprise, is the animated or CGI film Up, which is also arguably the best reviewed film of the year from the Walt Disney Company and Pixar. And this continues Pixar's streak of hits. And that did $292 million domestic, $379 million overseas, where it was surprisingly strong, a total of $672 million. Pretty nice for a CGI movie.
Really?
One of the surprises of the year was The Hangover, a low-budget comedy that Warner Brothers released without great expectations, went on to do $277 million in the U.S., another $185 overseas, where domestic comedies tend not to do as well. Total of $462 million. Very, very impressive for a movie that probably cost about, $30 million or so to make. A movie that cost a whole lot more than $30 million was Star Trek from Paramount, the latest edition of Star Trek, directed by J.J. Abrams, who kind of really went back to the roots and showed us how the whole story started, did $257 million in the U.S., another $127 overseas, for a gross of $384 million worldwide. The latest to join the list in terms of recent additions was Twilight New Moon, the second in the Twilight Vampire Saga from Summit Entertainment, which has grossed about $230 million domestically. Bringing up the bottom half of the top 10 list, Monsters vs. Aliens from DreamWorks Animation, released by Paramount with $198 million domestic. Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs, did very well for Fox, did $196 million in the U.S. and even more overseas. X-Men Origins, Wolverine, $179 million. And Night at the Museum, the sequel, Battle of the Smithsonian, $177 million. And one of the surprises of the year was The Proposal, the comedy with Sandra Bullock, who also is scoring big with a movie called The Blind Side, was probably the biggest grossing comedy of the summer.
So all in all, a lot of good stuff out there, a lot of good quality for 2009, huh, Alex?
There were some quality movies, and there were some big popcorn movies, so overall it was a very good year for the movie business. You wouldn't know it by the way they've been laying people off and downsizing and acting like the sky is falling, but meanwhile, in terms of ticket sales, more people are going to the movies than ever, and 3D has been very helpful. They're getting premium prices for 3D movies. IMAX is going like gangbusters, also with premium prices. So the movie business is looking pretty healthy at the moment.
Well, staying with movie news for a moment, Michael Jackson passes away earlier this year. Sony releases its final concert in movie form. How did it do?
It did very well, better than I expected, called This Is It. It did about $70 million in the U.S. and $239 million worldwide. Remember, this was shot as background footage for a documentary or for the personal use of Michael Jackson, but it was shot with high-definition cameras, and there was lots of them. And then they were able to go in, and after he passed away, and turn it into what really was quite an entertaining behind-the-scenes movie and gave you a nice insight into him and how he worked, and showed you know, what a talented guy he really was in the size of that loss.
You know, you mentioned Hangover grossing $462 million worldwide, and I noted that it was the highest grossing R-rated comedy this year, breaking a record held by Beverly Hills Cop from some 25 years ago. What does this mean in terms of R-rated comedies? Would we expect to see more of these coming next year?
Well, you know, R-rated and comedy doesn't really go together very well historically, but now that we've seen that it can work on this level, I'm sure we're going to be seeing more. And, you know, a 25-year-old record is a big deal to break. But whether or not anybody else can do it is a difficult question. And I'm not sure you're going to see a flood of R-rated comedies. For the most part, with comedies, what you want is PG-13 or PG, because most of them want those teenagers and younger people to come, not only go once, but go over and over again. So The Hangover really stands out as a movie that attracted adults as well as the younger people and really played much more than expected.
Well, next segment, I want to talk to you a little bit about Avatar, which I know is about to open in theaters worldwide here right around the corner, and we'll do that right after this.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth, being powered by Shipple.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com, and a platform called Tendency. Check it out at Shipple.com. It's Ray and Brad, and our favorite guest of all time, I guess I would say that.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Benblock here with the Advertising Show. Stay with us. We've got more in just a moment.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You worked too hard, you ate too much, the cheesecake made you greedy. Let your aching head and stomach hear this message from Old Speedy.
As we wrap up 2009, ready to roll into 2010 or 2010, however you'd like to say that, we've got Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth here at the Advertising Show with a very special guest, Alex Benblock, who is contributing editor at The Hollywood Reporter. Alex, great to talk to you once again.
Great to be here.
Well, Alex, so when are we breaking with Avatar? And I understand there was some technology behind that movie.
Well, James Cameron's Avatar is probably the most technologically advanced movie ever made. I've seen part of it, and I have to tell you that if you've seen a CGI movie before, meaning computer-generated images, forget about what you've seen. This takes it to another level. And what Cameron was able to do in the past, if you saw Beowulf or more recently the Disney version of Christmas Carol, what you have are people who put little dots on their face and the camera shoots them and then the computer generates images off that. What Cameron has done is he actually put a little cap on them with a camera that hung off and shot a close-up view of their face. So he has captured the eye movement and every muscle movement and every facial movement in more detail and more realistically than anybody has ever done before. And now you add in, remember Cameron is the guy who gave us Titanic a decade ago, you add in his skill to tell a story, and this is a love story, an adventure, a science fiction picture, and also with huge battle scenes. It's most comparable to me to Dances with Wolves, only set in outer space, about a soldier who has physical problems ends up getting this new body, the avatar of the title, and joins these this race of giant blue people on a planet who have tails and are highly educated. And at first he's supposed to go in and spy on them, ends up falling in love with the daughter of the chief, and joining with them, and in the end leads a rebellion by them against the people who put him there. And so I'm expecting this is going to be a very big movie with critics, with audiences, and as the award season develops, I think you can count on this to be a movie that's going to get a lot of attention, both for the technology and for the story.
Well, we can't talk about the good without the bad. We understand there were, what, three, maybe four major flops this year at the box office. Recap for us, would you, Alex?
Well, the biggest flop of the year has to be the Universal release Land of the Lost with Will Ferrell. Forbes magazine recently did a list of the most overpaid actors in Hollywood based on what they were paid in the performance of their pictures, and Will Ferrell was number one on the list. Now, of course, he's had some big hits in his time. He's made a lot of money for a lot of people, but he collects a big payday, and in this case, this was the movie nobody wanted to see. This was the movie that lost. And there were other failures, of course. Eddie Murphy continues his streak of flop after flop. How he keeps getting the big bucks and making more movies is beyond me, but he does. This one was called Imagine That, and very few audiences were able to imagine it at all. And then there was Bruno. Of course, Sacha Baron Cohen playing his latest alter ego, coming off a big hit previously. Here plays the Austrian designer, and he was way over the top in terms of language and images and what he did, and just turned people off. And while it did some modest business, it the expectations were nowhere close to being met. And those are my three picks for the biggest flops of the year.
Well, remind us, although we've got the Oscars around the corner, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the changes that are in place for the 2010 award ceremony. Recap, if you would, Alex, the 2009 Academy Awards for us.
What a surprise winner we had this past spring when Slumdog Millionaire, a picture that almost didn't get distributed at all, made independently by Warner Brothers, which decided that they didn't even want to distribute it, allowed it to be picked up by Fox Searchlight, and became the little movie that could. And really a surprise and a worldwide success, not just in the U.S., a delightful movie, fun to watch, exciting, great storytelling. The music and the energy to the thing were enormous. And it went on to win Best Picture, which I think very few expected. And getting a lot of the credit, quite deservedly, Danny Boyle, who was named Best Director at the Oscars. In terms of the acting awards this year, Sean Penn won for Milk, playing the homosexual mayor of San Francisco who was assassinated, a controversial decision because Sean Penn is controversial in his political opinions. Not nearly as controversial, but a little bit surprising, was Kate Winslet for The Reader. This was a Holocaust-themed movie, a very tough subject, and I must say the Weinstein Company did a brilliant job with the distribution of it. They nurtured it all the way through the awards season and built it up and really had great success. Not a surprise, but kind of touching, the late Heath Ledger won for Best Supporting Actor for The Dark Knight. Not the kind of picture that usually gets a lot of Oscar attention, but Heath Ledger was amazing, and I think there was a lot of sentiment after he passed away. And WALL-E, one of the best-reviewed movies of the year, again, Pixar, CGI, swept all the animation awards, including winning the top animation award at the Oscars, as it had won in almost every other award that it was up for.
As we do wrap up the year here with Alex Van Block and Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe on the Advertising Show, we've got another segment coming your way, and good news is here, we have Alex not only this week, but next week as well here at the Advertising Show. So stay right for it right here. We'll be back in just a minute.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of kids eat Armor hot
dogs? Welcome back. Alex Van Block with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe at The Before we get into any questions about movies or anything like that, got to get Alex's take on Tiger Woods. I mean, just because everybody else is talking about it, Alex. So what do you think about that whole thing?
Well, you know, it's hard to feel sorry for this young man who had such an opportunity and has made so much money. Arguably, last year the biggest earning athlete on the planet, and he's self-destructed here. His own weakness as a human being, and we all have our weaknesses, has come back and bit him in a very bad way personally, and then he added to it by apparently getting drunk and crashing his car and getting a lot of bad publicity. And it's not going to affect his golf game. He'll continue playing golf, but it is affecting his endorsement game. He already has been dropped by some of his sponsors. Commercials that he's in have been pulled. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a guy who really had an image as Mr. Clean, as you know, the young man you wanted to be a role model, and now suddenly he doesn't seem so clean. He seems kind of, you know, slimy. And so the millions and millions of dollars that he makes off endorsements are in jeopardy here, and for a lot of these big advertisers who signed contracts with him, who have gone out on a limb, in a sense, to identify their products with him, this is a huge marketing problem, an advertising problem, and I think that it's going to have long-term consequences. Unlike, say, Kobe Bryant, who, when he was accused of rape and then had a trial and eventually got off from the trial, he was able to come back and say, look, I was exonerated, and I'm still a good guy, and I love my wife, and whatever mistakes I made, I'm here and I'm back. And little by little, his sponsors have stood by him. I think Tiger Woods is going to have a different experience, and I think it's going to take a long time, if ever, for him to get back the image and the loss of income that this whole thing is going to cost them.
You know, it's a textbook case on how not to deal with the media when you have something controversial. I'm not a golfer, Alex. I don't know if you are or not, but whenever I hear Tiger Woods in a foursome, I'm not going to be envisioning three other guys.
Well, what can I say? I play golf, but it's hard to call myself a golfer based on what I do.
I understand.
Certainly not in his class, but... you know, I think Tiger Woods will continue to be a force in the world of golf. I don't think he's going away. But I think that in terms of image and in the advertising world, Madison Avenue is no longer going to be beating a path to his door to find out how badly his car is wrecked.
Yeah. Well, jumping back into the subject at hand, the Oscars this year, or next year, I should say, have big, big changes in store. As you take us through those changes, I want you to wrap it up by giving us your thoughts on what all of these changes will portend for the business.
Well, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has a problem, and that is the ratings have steadily been going down for about 10 years on the Oscar show. This is their main source of income. They have a long-term deal with ABC. Everybody's been scratching their head over there and at the network trying to figure out what to do. So based on a suggestion from last year's producers, the Academy decided to try something pretty radical. They've expanded the Best Picture category, which has been 5 movies per year since the 1940s, and it's going to be 10 movies for 2010. And nobody in Hollywood really knows what this means. You know, the way this works is the studios actually crunch numbers based on what they think an Oscar nomination will do for them in terms of box office or home video sales or the value of a movie in other ancillary markets like television and so forth. But when you have 10 movies, nobody really knows what it means, so everybody's waiting to see. Now, as some people suggest, you know, last year they thought The Dark Knight, which was one of the highest grossing movies of the year, should have also, because of its great reviews, been a Best Picture nominee. And some people say it was number 6 on a list of 5, and that these changes, in a sense, are to make sure that this year's version of that will make the list. But we don't really know until those nominations come out early next year. Maybe they'll nominate 10 art films. Maybe they'll, you know, pick a documentary or a comedy or some other picture that typically would not get nominated. And I talked to Tom Sherrick, who's the president of the Academy, about this. And he said, look, it's an experiment. And if it turns out to be a disaster, we can always change back to five. He said, but we are confident there's plenty of good movies out there. He said, at the end of the year, did you ever see a critic do a best five list? They always do a best 10 list. And so we think there easily are going to be 10 movies to nominate. What's odd is that they didn't expand the director category. So five of the best 10 movies will not be represented by the directors, or can't be under the structure of this. Nor did they change any of the acting categories or other stuff. They did move all of the sort of honorary awards, the humanitarian award, other special awards out of the telecast in order to speed it up. And they did have a special show recently in Hollywood just for that, which was quite touching. It was a non-televised show, and it gave them more time to really honor these people. The other big news here is that the first-time show producers are looking to jazz up the show, maybe bring in a younger audience. And they've chosen Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin, the co-stars with Meryl Streep of It's Complicated, a delightful new comedy. And Martin and Baldwin will co-host, and I think they're both a very good choice.
Well, next week we're going to tackle the world of television and the business of the entertainment world, as well as a few other sundry of subjects that we always cover with you each week, and we'll save those for 1 week. And
1 week from right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd like to talk about the healthcare crisis as well, if we could, Alex, if you have any solutions in that regard. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe here.
Public option, bring it back.
Bring it up.
Public option.
There you go. We've got more of the advertising show coming your way here in just a minute. Stay with us.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Another public service announcement from Brill Cream. Men, beware. Use one dab of Brill Cream. Just a little dab makes your hair look excitingly clean.
Welcome back, and thanks again to our special guest, Alex Ben Block out of L.A. Alex is back with us next week with so much more to talk about, beyond the movies, beyond the blockbusters, and all that kind of good stuff. So we look forward to talking to Alex once again. Jeffrey Gittimer coming your way here in just a few moments. The top, this is out of Advertising Age. The top 100 global advertisers heap their spending abroad. Okay, if you want to follow the money, got to get a passport, basically. Top 100 global advertisers, 62% of their measured media budgets outside the U.S. last year, according to Ad Age's Global Marketer Study, which covers about 90 countries. Coca-Cola allocates just 16.5% of its $2.67 billion measured media spending to the U.S. Three-quarters of Coke sales come from outside the U.S. Well, that would be logical. I guess P&G, Procter & Gamble, the world's biggest advertiser since overtaking Unilever in 2002, devotes 65% of its $9.73 billion measured media spending to international markets, slightly ahead of the 61% of P&G revenue that comes from outside the U.S. The biggest marketers investing ad dollars wherever they can find revenue or potential for growth in a tough global economy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not to say they're doing the wrong things. They're doing some smart decisions this time, huh?
Well,
so
when the whole world, I mean, when the U.S. Economy is tanking, go to the world market.
Why not?
Why not?
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
Broaden your market. You know, Ray, I don't know if you've heard about this, but video startup Vivo is scheduled to launch next week, supported by three of the largest record companies, and the tech know-how from YouTube, Vivo, which is will be representing videos from many of the world's biggest recording stars, is being called MTV on steroids.
Really?
So I guess it'll be in court soon, and they'll be joining the Major League Baseball Association. I don't know. But essentially, I'm going to keep an eye out for the Vivo.
Vivo.
If they do as well as they're expected. It's kind of the next-gen MTV, if you will.
Or the next-gen YouTube, basically.
Well, it's video and supported by three of the largest record companies, so it's kind of an MTV.
Payola.
Online.
Something like that.
Online.
You mean Clear Channel no longer controls that, I guess.
Correct.
Huh? Exactly. Hey, Jeffrey Gittimer is with us. Always great to have Jeffrey. And Jeffrey always talks about testimonials as being an integral part of promoting yourself. There's no better place to go to find satisfied clients and let them tell your story and sing your praises. And so that's what this is all about. Let's go.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
If you have to get a written testimonial because you can't get a video testimonial, here's what the written testimonial should say. The written testimonial should be phrased in a way that takes away risk or neutralizes a fear. It should be phrased in a way that shows a value or a specific enhancement. A testimonial should reinforce a claim. A testimonial should claim a happy ending. There is the unspoken secret of testimonials. How do you get them? And the answer is the same as for referrals. You earn them. The difference with a testimonial is often you will have to earn them and ask for them. It's even okay to prompt the customers to what to say or what you want them to say, if what you want them to say is the truth. The only thing worse than an exaggerated testimonial is the prospect who bought from you and found out that the testimonial was exaggerated. I can make you one promise about testimonials. No matter what form they're in, they work. I can also issue you this caution. They must be used in the proper manner or they lose their power. Oftentimes, salespeople use testimonials to get in the door. What are you thinking? Well, obviously, if that's your only way to do it, then do it. But the power of the testimonial is the proof that they offer at the time that the customer is ready to decide. Testimonials should be used at the end of the sales cycle to dispel any doubt, reduce all risk, substantiate value, and pave the way to the order.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittimer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
"This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks."
And that's the way it is. I see if Walter Cronkite had used an ending like that, he would have even been more memorable, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, right. We've got Alex coming our way next week. What do you have there real quick?
Well, real quickly, beginning just this week, bloggers, Twitterers, and others who write online reviews and endorse products using new media must disclose who they're happening to be paid by, if they're actually being paid by merchandise or payments or whatever it happens to be that they're writing about, per new guidelines from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. So no more of this, wondering if what you're reading is a paid political announcement, as we like to say.
Sure.
Or if it's actually someone's true feelings about a product or service. I think that's a smart decision on the FTC's part. I'm not big on, government controls over media, but in this particular case, if somebody's out there blogging on behalf of, makeup product X, you want to know whether they're being paid by the company or whether it's just their opinion.
And it seems like something like that would be a big challenge as well for the FTC.
To police it, yes.
Yeah.
You're right.
You're going to have a lot of stuff out there that just ain't true.
Well, I mean,
Wikipedia.
You're not going to be able to talk about beer anymore. You get all that free beer every week that I see in the closet when I come over here.
There's just one there.
That's right, but it's Anheuser-Busch, so it covers a lot of products.
Russian number six.
Oh, that's expensive.
Hey, Alex Ben Block next week wraps up the year with Ray Shillings and Brent Forsyth here at the Advertising Show. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. We invite you to visit them online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.